You're listening to Insight here on CAB Radio. I'm your host, Alan Young. We're sticking with the latest developments in the race for Sacramento mayor. We've just examined the race from the perspective of a reporter who closely followed both campaigns, including the declaration of victory last week by Assemblymember Kevin McCarty. But his opponent, epidemiologist Dr. Flojohn Cofer, has not conceded the race. So now we're going to hear her perspective. As we mentioned, we invited Assemblymember Kevin McCarty on the show, but according to his campaign, he is not available this week. Insight host Vicky Gonzalez sat down with Dr. Cofer about why she is not conceding the race.
Dr. Cofer, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
So I just want to start with Assemblymember McCarty. He has already declared victory in this race. You have not conceded the mayoral race. What is your message to voters?
My message to voters is that we are out ballot curing right now, which is making sure that every ballot counts. As you know, when people vote, they are also asked to sign the outside of the envelope and date it. And sometimes people, the signatures don't match. I spoke to someone actually at the door when we were out ballot curing, letting them know the ballot hadn't been counted. And he said, oh, yeah, you know, I registered to vote when I was 16. I pre-registered. And so when I turned 18, you know, my signature has changed a little bit since when I first registered. And so just wanting to make sure that people know the process to be able to make sure their ballot is counted. And we have a lot of ballots that are in that position. We also still have a little over 8,000 ballots left to count for the county. I'm not exactly sure how many of them remain for the city. And so with an election as close as ours, we want to make sure that every vote is counted. That is important as part of our democratic process. It's not even just about the outcome of the election. Of course, I'd love to win and we'd love to be able to get there. But we want to make sure that the process is honored. And so similar to what I did in the primary, you know, I never declared victory. I waited until all of the ballots were processed. And that's what I'm doing. And so my message to supporters is let's make sure that given everything going on at the national level, that we do our due diligence here, even in a local election, to make sure every voice is heard.
When it comes to this general election race, McCarty has led from the get-go, but that narrowed with each ballot drop from Sacramento County's registrar's office. The difference between you two now is just over 1%. Did you expect the trajectory of returns to go this way?
Yes, we saw that in the primary, that, you know, there's this sort of conventional wisdom about it. And I don't know how true it is, but that, you know, it tends to be the more the older voters tend to vote first, tends to also be more conservative voters tend to vote early. And that, you know, the younger voters, the newer voters, and the more maybe progressive voters tend to vote later. So that has been a trajectory that we've seen, not just in Sacramento races, but just generally. I mean, even across the state, you know, initially the projections about how many votes Donald Trump had gotten seemed really high for California. And then as we counted more ballots, it started showing up in the direction that we would expect for our state. So that's something that we knew. And I said that on election night. I said, look, you know, we know who our people are. I always joke and say, you know, I'm a person who has always voted on election day, except for this year. I voted the day before. So, you know, but usually I'm an election day voter because I love election day. It's just been something so exciting to me since I turned 18 to be able to actually be a part of, you know, our government and make these important decisions. And it felt very grown up. And since I was never going to, you know, buy cigarettes or do some of the things that you can do when you turn 18 to make that seem, you know, really official, for me, it was voting. It was registering to vote and having the opportunity to vote. And so that's really special to me. And I love Election Day in a very nerdy way.
It certainly was the responsible choice when you could have bought cigarettes.
Exactly. So my dad died of heart disease from smoking. So that has always been a no-go for me. So I was never going to do that. Even some people I know would buy them and just toss them. But I just didn't want to. I wanted to feel adult, though. And so that was something that really made me feel like an adult. And to this day, it still feels like an honor and a privilege, especially as a student of history, knowing how hard women and Black people fought to be able to have that right and the fights we're even having now to protect those rights and make sure people have access. So it's something that it's a civic duty that I take a lot of pride in.
So I mentioned that the gap between you two has narrowed and it's pretty slim. It's just over 1%. McCarty has just over 95,000 votes from city voters. You have 92,000 and change. So the difference between you two is just over 2,600. McCarty's campaign emailed a statement saying that there's an estimated 2,500 votes left within city limits when it comes to those 8,000 that you were talking about countywide. So is it enough to win with the votes left? And that's why he's declaring a victory. However, this race could even be closer when all of those votes are tallied. Is there an avenue, or are you considering asking for a recount?
It's something certainly that we should consider exploring, especially given how close the race is. But for now, we're focusing on the ballot carrying and making sure that the votes that we already have are counted. And then we can explore if it's necessary for us to do a recount. In a close election, you know, it sometimes is helpful to be able to do a recount. I'm not here saying that I know the outcome of the election. In fact, I have, in a very nerdy way, again, kind of been describing this as Schrodinger's election, right? We're having all of these conversations about what is and is not going to happen. The votes have already been cast, right? So there is an outcome. We're just waiting to find out what it is as we're tallying. And so I just want to make sure that we do that process as best as possible, and that we don't do anything to stymie the efforts to do that. And I don't want people to see, oh, the race is over. There's no reason for me to cure my ballot. Yes, there is. This is a close race. And regardless of who wins, it is important that every vote is counted. That is just a matter of personal integrity to me, that every single person who cast a ballot has the opportunity for that ballot to be counted. And so that's what I'm waiting for. And that's what's most important to me, even more so than the outcome. I'm happy to, you know, respect whatever the outcome is, but I want to wait for that outcome.
I also want to break it down by neighborhood, because I find that to be interesting, especially it lets you nerd out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And there is a breakdown on the Sacramento County website as well. You did well in the city center, downtown and midtown, South Sacramento, Oak Park, Curtis Park. You struggled, though, in East Sacramento, Land Park, and the Pocket. Mm-hmm. Kind of a mixed bag in Natomas and North Sacramento. What message do you take away?
Yeah, I take away that, you know, people in Sacramento thought a lot about this race, and they made decisions based on a number of factors. And I think it's really difficult to be able to say what exactly those factors were. But certainly, you know, I think, you know, some of the things that people were seeing that they wanted was a new message, that they wanted to be represented and have somebody who was really focusing on making sure that their voices were heard during the campaign and in governance. I think that there were also people for whom having run for office before is a really important qualification, even if you've never held the position that you're running for now. And so I think that's probably a lot of people who know the name McCarty, and were looking for someone whose name has appeared on the ballot before, or went with, you know, Jack Johnson, the name you know, right? So I think that there's also an element of that, right? Recognizing that every voter has their own decision making about that. You know, my argument to voters throughout the campaign was that I actually have the requisite experience to do this job. And we have seen people with a similar resume to, you know, Assemblymember McCarty struggle in this role. Our mayor has talked about how much more difficult being mayor was than being, you know, a state senator. And he was in leadership at the state, something, you know, Assemblymember McCarty isn't. So I think that there was an argument that I was making that is an unconventional one, which is, look, I have not run for office before, but I also have done a lot of this work, and I'm not new to the city. And I've been on, you know, three different city commissions and county commissions, and I've been working in policy, and I have experience actually managing the thing that is the number one issue in Sacramento, which is homelessness. And so I think that resonated with people who were looking for a voice, we're looking for a different approach, we're looking for public health. And I think for other people, they were making the decision of sort of like, where do things fall? And I think that, you know, geographically, our neighborhoods are very similar in some ways. Everybody in every neighborhood named homelessness is one of their top issues. And yet the things that people materially are struggling with and their feelings of how their voices are heard or their civic engagement does differ based on, you know, how much political power you may feel you have, what your social and economic status is. And so I think some of that is also playing out as well.
Well, when it comes to civic engagement and wanting to actually vote, there was a difference in voter turnout as well when it comes down to precinct. We did get a precinct map from Political Data, Inc., from Paul Mitchell. They track ballot returns statewide, but also, you know, locally in city limits. And broadly speaking, the neighborhoods where you were leading, it had a lower voter turnout in the 30 to 40th percentile. And I'm speaking broadly here, compared to McCarty's neighborhoods where he's currently leading in the 50th to 60th percentile. Mm-hmm. You and your campaign, I'm sure, did a ton of research going into this. What are the differences between the precincts that you're leading in versus McCarty?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, what people were seeing and what messages resonated with people. And that's every campaign, right? It's we're sharing a message, a vision for the city. And, you know, the extent to which people are paying attention to that message, right? And when they tune in, but also what they hear from it. And that's all going to be different. And so what I see here is a clear, you know, understanding of there were a lot of people across the city. Like we can break it down by precincts, but we can also look and say, this is a very close race. And so that means that across the city, the message resonated with a lot of people. And that, you know, you have two candidates who, when we think about the broader, you know, ideological spectrum, are closer together, right? Maybe than, you know, you would expect in some other races. And so that made it a really interesting decision for people to make. And they're making it not necessarily based on the lines of what political party are you in or, you know, how do you feel about one particular policy?
Because it's a nonpartisan race.
Exactly. But you're really sort of, I mean, even though it's nonpartisan, people know sort of where you are right. politically. But, you know, they're making the decision more on a robust number of factors that are everything from how do I feel about, you know, experience and, you know, your platform to do I know you to, you know, to all of these things. Right. And so what I see is just a very close race because we had a very competitive race. We offered some real options for people and I think had some conversations that have been very, very, very overdue in Sacramento and needed. And I think my takeaway from all of this, we need some new conversations in Sacramento, that there are a lot of people here who want some change, who want to be able to be part of our process. And I hope that irrespective of who wins, you know, one of the things I said on Twitter right after the election a few days later was, you know, I think it's really important that we sit down and talk to the people and I have an opportunity for people who didn't vote for whoever the winner is to be able to talk about what their concerns are, what their hopes are, and how they can get involved. We need to be able to, in some ways, do a little bit of truth and reconciliation after elections, especially, I think, when they're this close, because there's a real opportunity for us to be able to say, how do we now work together as a city together? What are the things that were brought up during the campaign that maybe the person who won wasn't tuned into, but now you have to govern for everyone. And so I think that's what I'm really taking away from this is that people want a different spirit and leadership here in Sacramento, and they're pushing for that. And that is not something that should be ignored, no matter who wins.
When it comes to that reconciliation and that reflection that you're suggesting, have you done that for yourself? Because it is such a close race, but you are still behind. Have you done that? It's a human thing. Done some reflection of, oh, what could I have done differently to maybe get more votes?
I think I want to start with the fact that by everybody's calculation, on April 19th of 2023, I'm not supposed to be here, right? So the win was the shock and awe on everyone's faces when we came in first in the primary. The win is that this was not a decisive victory. I mean, even Paul Mitchell had to say, I didn't think Flo was going to get 40%. And now everybody's biting their nails wondering how this race is going to turn out, right? So all of those wins along the way, reminder that this is the first citywide campaign that has accepted no corporate money. There are a lot of people who simply, you know, got involved in this campaign because of the possibility of, and what we've demonstrated is that you can be a viable citywide candidate and not take corporate money. And I know that that makes the corporate interests that are used to money being their main source of power terrified. And that makes me happy. And partly not because they're enemies, right? I want to make that very clear, but it makes me happy because that's the way it should be. People power should be a threat and money should not be the thing. I look at the amount of dollars that were spent sending out attack ads against me and, you know, I want to be really clear, pretty racist and sexist attack ads against me that were disappointing. And I've said that, you know, throughout the campaign, it was really disappointing to be attacked in that way and to have things that I've clearly said misrepresented intentionally. And so I think it's really, so what I look at is the win of a lot of people said that's nonsense and I don't like it, right? What I look at is a lot of people said, you know, I do want my politicians to be able to stand up for what's right and to be willing to not take corporate money. I want to live in a city that actually allows everyone, including our corporate interests, to have a seat at the table, but not have the only seats at the table. And so that's the exciting part for me, right? That's the part that I want to make sure isn't lost in the outcome is we've done good work. And what I think a lot about is my Spelman sister, Stacey Abrams, you know, in Georgia, and the work that she did to electrify and excite people and get people involved and wanting to make sure that we take the lessons of making sure we build on this movement, regardless of what the outcome of the election is.
When you talk about those campaign ads and attack ads against you, I mean, this is an election. A key piece in McCarty's criticism of you hinged on a comment that you made in the past about underutilized parks as a solution for homelessness. You did clarify on our show that you meant the city's vacant parcels. I clarified that night.
Yeah. So he was not unaware of what I said the day it was said. His team decided to hone in on that because they wanted to. I mean, they also sent out mailers saying that I threatened violence against the police, which is a bold-faced lie. I've literally never said that. You cannot find that anywhere. And even the thing that they pointed to was a bold-faced lie, right? So, like, I get that, right? It's a campaign, and I was not naive going into this thinking that everybody would behave with integrity. I knew that wasn't going to be the case. I knew it was going to get personal and political. I was disappointed, though, because I have a relationship with Assemblymember McCarty. I have worked on bills with him. He is a member of the California Legislative Black Caucus. And so as a Black man, I expected a certain level of just basic human respect from my opponent. And that part was disappointing. And I said that publicly. I'm not saying anything here that I didn't say at forums. It was disappointing. But also, I'm not naive enough to know that sometimes when people are trying to win a race, they're willing to take any tactics. And for me, when I started this race, I was very clear that my values came first, and I was not going to do anything in this race to try to win that would compromise who I am as a person and make it hard for me to sleep at night. And so that did mean that I wasn't going to take low blows. That did mean that I wasn't going to do some of the things that are traditional in a campaign because I want to be the change I want to see in the world. I do not believe that the master's tools will dismantle the master's house. And so I wanted to do things different. I wanted to think different. I wanted to be different. I wanted to inspire joy and love and connection and have conversations with people who didn't agree with me and offer a real opportunity for, a campaign of ideas. And so that's what I decided to bring to the table. And I just decided at every juncture, even when I was being, lied about and unfairly critiqued, that this is a campaign about my morals and integrity and values and our city. And I'm not going to do the thing that's easy, which is take cheap shots or focus on my opponent. I was focusing on my race and my vision.
Do you think it was effective, though, and that it did damage your campaign?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was absolutely effective. I mean, lies spread faster than the truth, right? We've been talking about eating cats and dogs, even though that was absolutely patently false, right? We've been talking about, deporting 13 million people, even though that would cause the very inflation that a lot of people say is part of the reason why people were so focused on the economy at the national level, right? Like, we know the power of lies. And so absolutely, it has an impact. I mean, you spend, millions of dollars out and, to say, untrue things about someone, people are going to see them and there's a non-zero number of people who are going to see that and believe that. But again, what I go back to is who I am as a person and how I show up is going to be consistent with my morals and values. And that's not who I am. And so I'm not responsible for anybody else's behavior on planet Earth except my own. And so I decided to handle it and to govern myself according to the things that will allow me on Judgment Day to feel good about me.
You mentioned that the two of you had a relationship prior to this race. Have you and McCarty spoken since the election? Do you plan to?
No, we haven't spoken since the election, and he didn't return some of my text messages in July and August. Like, I don't know what's going on. And when I said when we were at KCRA, it was our last debate, and I was like, we've done so many of these between the primary and the general, you want to go grab a drink? And he was like, no. And I was like, okay. So I don't know if things were just tense. I don't know if, what it was. I was still, that was in the midst of all the lies and the kind of heavy campaigning, and I was like, you're still a neighbor. You only live a few miles from me. Like, we could have, we could just celebrate the fact that we're doing this thing for democracy, but, We haven't spoken. I obviously, when we get final results, I do plan to give him a call, but not before then because, you know, I had a really major loss in my life. A radio personality actually in Pittsburgh, who was my Girl Scout troop leader, my best friend's mom, and she died the night of election night. So I was actually in Pittsburgh for 2 weeks helping with the funeral and just grieving there. So I've been otherwise kind of occupied since the election.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I guess that then brings me, I guess, to this question. I mean, elections are tough, but obviously life still happens. How are you feeling at this point in the race?
I mean, personally, I am feeling really down. But that's not actually about the election. That's because I lost a second mother to me, you know, on election night. And so I've really been struggling with the grief cycle of that. And so to lose her was devastating. But after the election, I feel good about what we did. I feel good about the conversations we've had in Sacramento. I feel good about the race result, right? And that this is, you know, this is clearly a very tight race because we ran a competitive campaign, even though we didn't have the benefit of corporate money. And, you know, and so I think that that's really important. And I think the message resonated with a lot of people. And so it's not a glass half empty or glass half full thing. It's just sort of like, it is what it is. And at the end of the day, over 90,000 people already have said, this was my choice. And I deeply respect that. And I'm honored by it.
Finally, I mean, this was your first race and you exceeded expectations. This may not be the end, or you could very well be inspiring someone to see that this is possible. What message do you have for someone who sees your race and what you accomplished? Whatever the outcome is, you still exceeded expectations and they think, hey, maybe I can give a go at it now. And I didn't think I could have before.
My message to everyone is one we've been saying throughout the campaign, which is more is possible.
Dr. Cofer, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
That was Insight host Vicky Gonzalez speaking with Sacramento mayoral candidate Dr. Flo John Cofer about her reflections on the Sacramento mayor's race and her decision not to concede until every vote is counted. Sacramento County has not officially called the race, but that didn't stop Assemblymember Kevin McCarty from declaring victory last week. His campaign said he was not available to join us on Insight this week. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Alan Young. We're back in just a moment.